Right, we're here for a second edition of Tiki Quarterly. I'm Chris Wash 97. I'm here with Kiwi Chris, the Chris and Chris Show, once again talking about the wide spectrum of GT racing all across the globe. And let's start out with the big fish, the Blanc Pan Endurance Series. We had two pretty decent races going on with lots of drama and entertainment, but Silverstone came first, and Nicky Team and the Aston Martin crew won that race, but wasn't without any dramas, right, Kiwi?
Yeah, dramas that took far too long to be resolved, shall we say.
Now, what was the issue there? Because they won, but there's a huge, a little appeal process going on that took.
Yeah, so like for those who haven't been reading the three volumes of this saga, it started off in qualifying. They qualified on pole, but it was found that the FIA data logger wasn't logging data. So they were penalised basically with a disqualification from qualifying and put to the back of the grid. They protested that, so they raced under protest, which means the hearing had to be delayed to a later date. They went and won the race, but that's been under a cloud for a good old 2 months. Until the hearing a couple of weeks ago, at which point they won their appeal and got to keep their race victory.
And that's kind of like the first time we saw Aston Martin win an overall Blanc Pan Endurance championship race in a while, so It's a very good victory for the team. Was it R Motorsport, the team name?
Motorsport, indeed, which is basically Jota Sport and GT3.
Yep, with the Aston Martin factory drivers, I believe, Nicky Team, Jake Dennis, Maxime Martin. I know they field like maybe two cars in that championship.
They do.
But very good win.
Yeah.
Okay. So very good win for that team. A little bit of a home soil victory. But also, let's go on to the next round. Across the English Channel, the Paul Ricard round, the 6 hours of Paul Ricard.
The 6 hours of what the hell's the track limit?
Yeah, although I'm an American, so I wouldn't know what track limits are. It was just a fantastic race all the way around. And, I mean, the race itself, once again, was fantastic, but the whole talk is just about that final lap of the event.
It was really something else. And when you get a 6 hour race that comes down to the final lap after, it's always amazing, but you've really got to feel for the guys that lost that race in the end. They've been leading it for so long. In the end, the race was, of course, won by the Lexus number 14. Marco Seifert, Christian Kreen, and Albert Costa. So that's the first win for the Lexus in Europe. And has Lexus won in America yet?
The Lexus?
Yeah, it has, hasn't it?
Yes, they did. They won at the Mid-Ohio round.
Yeah. So they passed the Bentley number 7 on the last lap.
Okay, so I was right. It was between Lexus and Bentley, which it would have been kind of a first either way for all those cars, because it would be the first win for that new Bentley GT3 or the first win for that Lexus on SRO series grounds. Yes, the Lexus actually won on European soil before with International GT Open.
Oh yes, of
course. But this is kind of like this. Yep. But this is kind of their first win on like mainstream GT racing. So congrats to them, and they'll be up in the Spa-Francorchamps for the 24 hours Spa. Good luck to them.
Yep. I should also mention as well that Bentley would have also been the first win for Jordan Pepper.
That's right, the South African who was recently granted the Bentley factory drive.
After Guy Martin said, "I've had enough of ignoring black flags."
Monza 2017.
And in third place, showing how terrible Strecker racing were in the McLaren, Garage 59.
Yeah. Garage 59, I remember being very strong contenders for most of that race. I believe they led most of the race. I'm pretty sure something on the pit road happened that made them drop down the order.
Yeah, basically, you look at the the order after half an hour, 90 minutes, 2.5 hours, 3 or 4.5 hours. It's all number 58 ahead.
Yeah, so this is only a race behind Spa. I don't know if BOP adjustments are made in between the season in the Black Pan Endurance, but McLaren's looking like a very strong bet in those long distance races. So if they can get up front in qualifying, it could be a contender. We can see the first McLaren to win the Spa 24 in a while.
Of course, our motorsport as well, backing up from Silverstone, qualified on pole for Paul Ricard as well. And they were a good shot to win this race until they had a bit of bad luck and got involved in someone else's incident.
Yeah.
That's motorsport, but they're a professional organization. They'll bounce back from that.
Yeah, and track limits is going to be something that's going to be a big talking point when we get to the Spa-Francorchamps preview. But we still got quite a few topics before we get the actual 24 hours of Spa rhetoric we're going to talk to you guys about. Let's talk about our Black Pan Sprint Series, which is not as fantastic. It's kind of a bit of a sad shape if you compare it to the last couple of years. It's still decent racing, but it's kind of turned into an Audi wins lull from the original first years of the series.
Well, when Audi has half the grid.
Yep.
And considering that there's, 20-odd cars in the GT series, in the Blank Pain series.
Yeah, high teens, low 20s.
Yep. Half of them are silver or pro-am drivers.
Yeah, so Blank Pain...
There were 11 pro cars at Misano.
Yeah. That was the last round, wasn't it?
It was indeed.
Yep, I believe Audi swept that weekend.
Mm-hmm. Alex Ribeiro and Christopher Meese.
That's right. Alex Ribeiro is something. He raced for Alex Diob Racing in IMSA for a while.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I believe so. And nice to see him having success in basically an Audi factory car just winning races up in Europe. So congrats to that guy.
W Racing doing what W Racing do. Will Stevens and Dries Van Thor was second in both races, I'm pretty sure. Just confirming that now. Oh, no, second in race two. Race one, they had a bit of a bad run and finished... finish the race.
They did have a few problems in race one. I believe that was the night race. Actually, it wasn't even a night race this year. They ran it in the evening.
Well, that's because last
they reserved the night races... They reserved the night races for the Lamborghini Super Trofeo series races for some reason.
That's what you want to do. You want to put it's bad enough racing at night with these guys that actually know how to drive. Do it. Otherwise you don't and you have a whole world of trouble.
Well, they split the Lamborghini Super Trofeo guys up. So not a lot of cars on those grids, about 13 to 16 cars per race when you split the classes from four classes racing together all at once, just two classes each race. So Misano, it was an interesting weekend. It wasn't bad per se, but once again, Black Pan Sprint Series not in fantastic shape per se, but it's still decent racing.
It's just one of these missteps that SRO take every now and then where they just change something that doesn't need to be changed. I mean, you've got the sports club. You've got dedicated races where these silver guys and pro-am guys can race. Don't restrict entries from the pro guys to allow them to race on the same track as them.
Exactly my opinion, because when Vettel last year said, oh, let's restrict pro entries, it's hurting the am entries. You have this series dedicated to the ams, they can race there. You made the Blank Pan Endurance Series. I mean, I sort of understand Sprint Series. That's fine. I mean, Sprint Series is not too much of an issue. But Endurance Series, that's your bread and butter. That should be your pro series. I mean, AMs can be allowed to race there, but...
Not at the expense of the prize. And that's my biggest issue with the series, the sprint series at the moment. It's no fun having a GT3 series with 13 legitimate top-of-the-line cars.
If AMs want to race, they have several other series in Europe they can race. That's that's kind of me and Kiwi's opinion here on Stefan Rattel's whole cutting down on pro entry situation.
If you have a differing opinion to that, listen at to the end of the show, and I'll tell you how you can tell us that opinion.
Well, anyway, let's stick to Italy for a bit. There's a short little tidbit I'd like to share with you.
Okay.
Italian GT, not too good on numbers this year, unfortunately. Only about 16 cars. That's including GT3, GT3 Cup cars,
ooh,
and GT4s. Yes. But something did rise from the ashes of the Phoenix. A little bit of renewal in the series. Bentley, not the new Bentley GT3 that came out this year, but the old car.
Oh, the old car.
Bentley. Yep. Made its debut in the Italian GT at Mugello a few weekends ago.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't do too well, but it finished the race, and nice Italian livery on the British brunt. And I hope we see more of that as the old cars phase out. We're going to see new people acquire these cars and race them in more amateurish events. Nice to see with an Italian GT. I mean, the series is not too popular, understandably a very low car count, but having Bentley in there adds diversity to the grid and maybe brings some UK eyeballs to the championship.
Well, diversity is always a good thing. I'm guessing the Italian GT championship was all very much Ferrari and Lambo dominated.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who would have thought Italian cars in an Italian series?
Yep. They used to be much, much bigger, though. I remember, 40 cars racing all together at once in Mugello, in 2013-14. But, yeah, basically Ferraris, Lamborghinis, one Audi GT3 that's actually basically a factory lineup, Audi Sport Italia, which Benoit Trullier actually races in that car. Yeah, that's a deep dive. Other notable people in that championship, Giancarlo Fisichella, also races a Ferrari in there. And also Eddie Cheever III, I believe, the son to Indianapolis 500 winner Eddie Cheever.
The third son, I'm guessing.
Yep. He also races a Ferrari, I believe, a former champion. And if you don't know who Eddie Cheever III is, if you just need some more background on him, he raced with, I believe, Spirit of Daytona in the Rolex 24 this year.
Oh! Yeah, yes, he did, didn't he?
Yep.
I remember asking then, who's this guy?
Sort of got missed between all the Alonso coverage. But yeah, he did race with Spirit of Daytona.
Yeah, good on him.
Now, Keith, we were going to go a little bit closer to your home. Australian GT just had some big news about new ownership.
Yes. Tony Quinn, who's been owning the series for a long time, is getting old. And he's selling off all his businesses for many, many millions. And that includes Australian GT. So he's sold it to a bloke. I'll mention his name. You probably won't know who he is. Jim Manolios. Manolios. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Was it like Trofeo Motorsport? I heard something along those lines.
Yeah, I was going to get to that. So if you don't know his name, Jim Manolios, I think that's how you pronounce it, is the owner of Trofeo Motorsport, who race cars in their own right, and they bring all the Pirelli tyres in.
Okay, so that's a good deal.
That's a good deal. So he knows his motorsport. Tony Quinn's part of the deal. Tony Quinn's going to drive for the next 3 years in the series. So I'm guessing part of the deal was like, you just wave my trees for a couple of years, or just race at Aston Martin or whatever around here.
Yeah, Tony Quinn does love to race some Australian GTs.
Oh yeah, and now that he's going to retire and whatnot, retire from business life, he's got more time to focus on his motorsport assets, which are two tracks in New Zealand.
I believe he races McLarens more.
He races whatever he can get his hand on. He races Aussie racing cars, and you name it, he races it.
Oh, as far as I know, he's keeping his racetracks in New Zealand, right?
Yes. Yes, he is.
Okay. That's good.
Two of the best racetracks in the country, so why wouldn't you keep him?
Although, I believe, what's the name of the Thailand's Motorsport Park? There's like a living complex building next to the track, so that's a yikes for me. So,
why would you say that?
Well, it might not been Highlands, but a racetrack in New Zealand was like having some living complex, like a bunch of houses or something, building being built.
Well, Central Park apartments are building at Highlands. But the thing is, Highlands was never meant to be a motorsport facility in its own right. It was always meant to be a, you know, like a all-in-one members venue, basically.
Okay, yeah. They only have, like, two or three race weekends a year. They have, like, a historic festival, and they have the 101 or 500.
You got to remember that Highlands Motorsport Park is literally in the middle of nowhere. So...
Right. Around by mountains. That's why they can't stream anything out there.
Yeah, yeah. So exciting times for Australian GT, and CAMS has ratified the change this time. They've actually done something good for a change, and should be exciting times ahead.
All right, 2019. I'm excited to see how Australian GT does in 2019. Of course, in 2018 they already made a bunch of changes. They have a basically an overall championship now with a bunch of sprint and endurance rounds, and possibly making the move away from supercars is the best decision they could ever made, because guess what? This means free live streaming to everybody around the world, and this only gets them exposure, which they were quite lacking internationally when they were racing with the V8 supercars.
Yes. And the series itself is on the right track. It's got 19 GT3 cars racing there at the moment, all with two drivers, usually.
Also allows GT4s in the championship as well, no split races, which is good.
The race, where are we up to? We're up to... They're actually on a bit of a break for a couple of weeks. They're up to Sydney Motorsport Park, which is another sprint round on the 4th of August.
Oh, that's what supercars then. Okay, so they have two races with supercars.
Three races in that weekend.
Oh, I meant two rounds with supercars. Yeah. They had Albert Park and Sydney. Okay, so three races for Australian GT with the supercars on August the 3rd to the 4th. There's also a V8 Supercars night race. We're turning a bit of super chat here, but
we are promoting
a bit of cross promotion.
Hey, yes, indeed. Hey, I'll take what the listeners I can get for that supercar chat podcast. Also, while we're on my part of the world, should we talk about some of the entries we're getting for the 12 hour next year?
Yes, let's talk about the entry list that's been building up for all these intercontinental GT challenge events, including the Bathurst 12 hour that's already grown big for 2019. What's been going on?
Our first entries have come in from, we've already talked about them, R Motorsport. Now, they've talked about entering their old V12 Vantages because cars from this year that homologated this year can't be raced at Bathurst next year.
That's right, because they have testing in like March to approve all the homologations to make sure all the BOP adjustments are just right for the upcoming season.
Yeah. But yet they want to race the new GT3 Vantage even though it hasn't been homologated or hasn't been released yet.
Yep, so that's why only 2018 cars will be allowed in 2019 Bathurst 12-hour. Yeah, wasn't there like an article kind of like blurring up the lines a
bit.
There's
been articles that have been saying both. What could potentially happen?
I remember that.
What could potentially happen? And we saw it this year when they brought out the GT4 car that wasn't ready to go, like homologated. They could race it or not. They could race it in one of the invitational class.
Yeah, that's the whole reason the invitational class is there, just to have weird and wonky cars. You know, the Daytona Sports Coupe that's been there?
Yeah.
Actually, that brings me some sad news. That car won't be returning for the Bathurst 12-hour this year.
Oh.
It made its final race at the Victorian Sports Sedan Championship at Sandown this past weekend.
How do you know about races going on in my pub that I don't know exist?
Oh, Midweek Motorsports Listeners Collective.
That's a shame. But at the same time, their Viper they've got is... Oh.
Yeah, the Viper does look nice. Mm.
But considering we're going to get the new Bentley down here for the first time, the new Nissan down here for the first time, the armada of Audis as we usually get, next year is going to be pretty damn swell. Just a shame I'm going to miss it.
And you mentioned the new Nissan. The new Nissan got its first SRO win in the Black Pan GT Asia Championship this weekend at Fuji.
Oh, yes, it did.
With KCMG. I can't remember if it won GT300 in the Brewery Ram Super GT race, but I do know that it won the first race of Fuji in Black Pan GT Asia. So KCMG brought that home. It was actually the Pro-Am car, not the Pro car, that one. Ironically enough.
There you go. I'm now checking GT300, and it was... looking up drivers ain't going to help. The Leon Racing number 65, whatever that is.
That's the Mercedes. Okay, so that was the first one for the new Nissan.
Okay.
That's all right.
That's all right. They know what they're doing. But it'd be nice to see Nissan competitive again. Because they haven't really been competitive yet in Blancpain.
No, that's quite a shame. We'll see how it does Thursday when the qualifying and practice does start up. But
we'll get to
talk
that.
About other intercontinental. Yep. Talk about other intercontinental GT challenge events. I mean, California 8-hour and Suzuka 10-hour events this year, their grids are growing. I mean, Suzuka 10-hour and California 8-hour, they're growing up to about a 30-car grid.
Which, for an inaugural event, okay, that's what, three classes, is it? GT3, GT3 Cup, GT4?
GT300, GT3 overall. I believe there's just that.
Oh, yeah, there is it?
Yeah.
Okay. That's brilliant. And I know we're seeing quite a few coming over from GT300, aren't we? At least three, I think I've seen. There we go, the Lotus Evora. Yep.
Yep.
We've also got, just get scrolling through. Yep, there's a Team Up Garage 86 mother chassis car. And... looks like there's only the two. Yeah, it looks like we've only got the two from GT300, which is a bit of a shame, but of course, a lot of the big names from Europe are coming over to the play in Japan. You've got the Craft Bamboo Racing with Lawrence Santor, Kevin Ness, and Matthew Jaminet.
And Habata Racing got a bunch of Ferrari factory drivers to come race with them. Also, I believe the D Station Racing Porsche is also going to be there.
Yep, with Earl Bamber.
And let's not forget the Callaway Corvette that's going on in Japan as well, making its Asia debut.
Yes. I mean, it's going to be rubbish, but at least it's there.
Well, I mean, we'll see. Unfortunately, the whole Callaway Corvette, the Pirelli World Challenge thing didn't turn out too well, but we'll see how it does at Suzuka.
Well, we talked about Pirelli World Challenge, that's changed a bit, hasn't it? Why don't you explain that to me, because I got confused trying to read it all.
Yeah, so Pirelli World Challenge for 2019, and I'm sure this will be all reiterated back at the Israel press conference on Friday. But the overall GT class, I believe we're going to see a 90-minute race, just a single 90-minute race. Just two cars, I mean, not two cars, two drivers per car. I'm not sure what format's going to be, Pro-Am or whatever. I'm not sure if it's going to be, like, a team's choice. But that's the way they're going to go.
With GTS? Yep.
GTS is basically just GT4. They're going to just revert to 50-minute sprint races, and then they're going to have two separate championships. Not, I don't believe it's going to be ran with GTS, just two separate championships, GT4 West and GT4 East, of course, corresponding to the geography of the United States of America. And this is, of course, just basically a cheaper way to get people in GT4 cars. Not sure if those races are going to be included in the Pirelli World Challenge structure. Like involved in the same race weekend. I don't know if there's going to be like separate events for it. But
Because Pirelli World Challenge struggles enough for exposure in the US market as it is. So fragmenting your GT4 series into two separate championships like that on different race weekends is not going to be good for you.
Well, technically three different championships, because you have the big one, like the big GTS championship, then you have GT4 West and GT4 East.
So could it potentially be like a feeder? The GT4 East and West Regional Series feed up to, like you see with Canyon Pro up into NASCAR.
That's kind of like the idea. Most sports car race, the only sports car racers that really went up to NASCAR is Austin Cindric, and he's terrible.
But you know how to have like the Canyon Pro Series and whatnot.
Yes, that's kind of a good analogy for it, you know, NASCAR Canyon Pro Series West and East, GT4 West and East. So, not sure if they're going to have a few companion events and then some separate races on the side, but it'd be very interesting. Mm-hmm. Probably will challenge touring car division stays the same. If it's not broken, don't fix it. But speaking of the Pirelli World Challenge Touring Car Division, I got a funny story to tell you, Kiwi.
Okay, go on.
So, Pirelli World Challenge returned to Portland, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Portland being one of the best racetracks in Northwest alone in the United States. It's been kind of renowned as fans. I mean, fans loved it. I mean, IndyCar has some really good races there.
Yeah.
But one driver accidentally took a plane to Portland, Maine. And that's all the way across the country.
What? What?
Yeah.
Does he... What?
Literally cross country.
Portland, Maine. Does it even have a racetrack there?
No. That's literally from the Pacific Ocean to a state that borders the Pacific Ocean to a state that borders the Atlantic Ocean.
So, I've just done the Google search. It's only 47 hours driving time from one to the other.
Yep.
What was that chap's name?
I wish I got it. I know Sports Car 365 had it in there, one of their little notebooks for the weekend. But that's how I first heard of it. Just read notebooks on it because I was pretty excited for the return of Portland. I read that. It's like, ooh, it's costly. Well,
here's to you, mysterious TCR driver. You, geographically challenged lunatic. What? What? Move on, please.
Speaking of large distances away from Portland, Oregon, let's talk about the GT Nations Cup at Bahrain that's been recently announced a few months back. And if you don't know what it is, just basically think A1 GP but with sports cars.
Ooh.
Yeah. They're going to have like a bronze and silver driver.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have, of course, like the usual qualifying race and main race and stuff. But yeah, they're allowed to have liveries based on their national, what the team is posing for, what country or whatever. So they, we're going to have, we have literally might have flags on GT3 cars.
Cool.
Which, I'm down with that.
The problem with this though, limited to silver and bronze drivers, and if you're going to have a World Cup event like this, surely having drivers who actually represent the best drivers in your country is the way to go.
I see your point, but I mean, we already have the FIA GT World Cup at Macau.
Yeah, but which isn't a World Cup event. It's basically an event to see who crashes the least.
Basically, but there always been kind of a clamor for like a Pro-Am World Cup event, so they kind of caved into that. It's like, okay, we'll do it.
And I'm assuming the car doesn't have to be built in your country.
No, that doesn't have to be the case.
Because
sure.
Australia would be stuffed. What are we going to enter a bloody?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, like, I suppose we could enter a Brabham. We make those now.
I'm sure, like, WRC, for example, not say it's going to happen, but, you know, WRT has a Belgian flag livery, you know, its car. Phoenix Racing has, like, a German flag livery on its car.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, so for silver and bronze drivers, though, that... Yeah. It's hard to get excited when it's that.
But, bro. But also, kind of, in that announcement, there's been the GT4 World Final. Basically, a bunch of the GT4s that race around the world, including Pirelli World Challenge, British GT, even Australian GT, GT4 European Series, of course, they all get to be invited into Bahrain for the GT4 World Final. I mean, that's a pretty good weekend of racing.
It is.
If you're a sports car fan, I mean, you get A1 GP, basically. And then you get a GT4 World Final, and then if you're a fan of Porsche, you get Porsche GT3 Cup Challenge Middle East.
So it's a race, so you have two drivers sharing a car, is it? It's not like a combined thing, like you have two Australians racing in separate cars. You got one car between two drivers of that nation.
Yeah. Didn't A1 GP have like, what, their team was like United Kingdom or something?
Yeah,
they
yeah.
had like a driver from yeah. not doing that. Yeah. So basically, it's just like a team. I mean, it's in like November, right? So not much is going to be going on.
Ooh, I like this comment I've just seen on Speed Cafe when looking at this article. We've got Stephen. If Australia was to send two drivers, how's this for a combination? Silver driver, Stephen Johnson. Bronze driver, John Bow.
Ooh. Are you saying that you want to bring a touring car masters rivalry into a GT3 Pro Nations Cup, Pro Am Nations Cup race?
Why not? I mean, if they're Australia's two of Australia's best drivers in those categories, why would we not send them?
Just send it.
Yeah. You'd wait for Danny Rick, except until his car broke. But also, why Bahrain? Why Bahrain?
It's like the. Let's see. They're probably looking for a place with good weather. Because that, you know, November, December, not much places have good weather except the Southern Hemisphere. Even the summer, Southern Hemisphere is pretty bad.
Yeah, I wouldn't say pretty bad. It's quite nice down here this time of year. Also, I'm just reading.
I mean,
no factory teams at all.
Okay.
Implemented in GT4, so on this GT event with the GT Nations Cup, that's what we're calling it.
So I'm gonna be intrigued how many Pirelli World Challenge teams, or even Qatar Sports Car Challenge teams, come into this event with their GT4 cars. I'll be if any teams come from those series, I'll be rooting them on.
Also, this year, I just checked as well, the GT finals in Macau clashing with Shanghai WEC. Again.
Not same round, but once again clashing with the WEC round. Yeah, pretty bad time management.
If you're having what's meant to be a marquee event, why would you schedule it at the same time as another big event in the region?
Well, unfortunately, the FIA GT World Cup doesn't have too much leverage on the whole Macau Grand Prix organizers.
I know, but
schedule it a different date. Yeah,
it just seems you could work something out. Surely, I know Macau's got money, but surely they could work something out. I'm depressed. Can we move on to something else before I get angry?
That basically kind of wraps up the first bit of our show, just talking about the random tidbits and interesting stuff about the world of GT racing. This next part, after we take a little bit of a break, will be the Spa 24 preview. Me and Kiwi Chris will see you back for the part two. Spa 24. Welcome back. It's part two of the GT Quarterly second edition episode. We're here talking about the Spa 24, previewing one of the biggest GT3 races around the world. And already right off the bat, we got some entry list troubles, don't we, Kiwi?
It wouldn't be an SRO prestige event without entry list troubles. We've already lost, four cars?
And all of them within the Pro-Am entry list. That class, man, it's imploding. Well, not really imploding, but four cars in the same class all pulling out. Not really a good look. I mean, you have Kessel Racing, Daikyo Lazarus Racing, Car Collection Motorsport, and 961 Corsa. But out of all those withdrawals, a team did decide to step up and enter their car within Spa 24. It's Antonelli Motorsport, Italian GT regular, so we're going to see how that car does.
Poorly.
But Lazarus scaled down. Yeah. But the Lazarus Lamborghini scaled down to a one-car program in the Silver Cup after withdrawing the Pro-Am.
Okay.
And the 961 Corsa Ferrari, which included Giancarlo Fisichella, also has been withdrawn. And the Car Collection Motorsport Audi also pulled out, but basically just having an injury with the driver. That's why they pulled out.
So there's three big drivers that are without a drive currently. Giancarlo Fisichella, as you've mentioned, Michele Rugolo, and Alessandro Pierguidi.
Yeah, that's kind of a weird world, isn't it?
You could get a Ferrari together with those three, and it would probably go close to dominating.
Yeah, so right now we have 65 cars listed on the entry list, but we have two national group cars, which don't have any drivers listed for them.
Yeah,
so we might just
from
see
Mulner Motorsport.
Yeah. But we'll talk more in depth. Go ahead.
I was going to say, which is a bit of a shame, but at the same time, 63 cars around Spa is, beautiful.
Also chaotic, and the last time I checked, we're in for a bit of scattered showers on the Saturday of the race.
Well, it's Spa, of course it's going to rain. Did you expect anything different?
So, what is the event? It's a 24-hour GT3 race around the Ardennes Forest, Spa-Francorchamps, and it was a touring car race long before it was a GT3 race, but ever since, was it like the late 1990s, early 2000s, it turned into an FIA GT event. It's been for a place for GT cars ever since.
Oh, and they've been racing around Spa since 1924 in this sort of endurance event.
And this year marks the 70th edition of the race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's been a GT race since 2001, where the Chrysler Viper won in the GT Championship. Since then, we've had the Porsche 911, the Ferrari 550, the Maserati MC Hammer. We won three of them. In recent years, it's been dominated by Audi and BMW. BMW also obviously dominating the touring car era as well, because BMW just knew how to build a touring car when no one else did.
Which, a Ferrari did have a good chance of winning last year, I believe, but made contact with the was it a Lamborghini? I can't remember which car it was, but it made contact on the hairpin just after the start-finish line. And there's some, you know, a case where a driver is flipping another driver off at your Rouge. But...
yeah, well, you know, this 24-hour race around here with GT3s that are usually on each other's backsides for the whole race, of course there's going to be emotions.
So what are the classes to this event? Well, of course, you get the overall, which is the Pro class. You get Pro-Am Cup. Then you get Silver Cup. Then you have the AMs. And then you have the National Group class, or Group National. Hmm. Well, every single class, except for Group National, is just GT3 spec cars. Just the classes are based on driver rankings. But the Group National cars, they are basically Cup cars and Super Trofeos.
Basically, yeah. So the Pro class, no limit on drivers. You can have platinum, gold, whatever in that class. Pro-Am, you've got to have at least one bronze. Am Cup, you've got to have at least two bronze and a silver. And Group National, well, you can have whoever you want, because the cars aren't fast, and that's the challenge.
Yeah. They just have Group National because they just want more Belgian teams.
Yeah, I was going to say, does Group National still have a purpose anymore?
It's trying to get more belt, like, because, of course, when it was a touring car race, you had more of a local flavor. But now that's a high-stakes GT3 race, you don't have that kind of local pull anymore. So they're trying to get more Belgian teams and drivers into the race. Many people kind of don't want them there, but I don't mind it. I mean, they haven't been causing much problems ever since they've been created about 2 years ago. I don't remember the huge issues. So,
well, last year they seemed to be in the way a bit.
Well, this year they do have something other than the Porsche Cup car, though. They have a Lamborghini Super Trofeo,
which will catch fire at 2 hours in.
Correct. Which actually, GDL Racing is actually running that car, which is, if you watch Kerventic enough, you know that team. So
They've got a handy driver there in Andrew Harianto.
Yeah. Andrew Harianto, I believe, did win a lot in Lamborghini Super Trofeo Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I believe he did well in the Audi R8 LMS Cup this year.
He did, indeed. I seem to recall that when they raced at Adelaide, he was quite up there. So, taking it to the journey, guys.
He was quite up there, dominated.
Mm. And Sarah Bovey, the local driver from Belgium, who's actually the highest rated driver in that car. So, that might be a decent one just to keep an eye on. It. That won't be the one that gets in everyone's way. It'll still catch fire, but...
That's right. The Ferrari 90 Mercedes.
Ah, yes.
That hairpin. That. Okay, now it's coming back.
So, should we talk about the the entry list now? Because it's stacked.
Yeah, let's get the entry list out of the way, then we can get down to the grit with the pit stop rules and what's the support races and the SRO press conference, you know, speculation. So where do you want to start this off? Of course, we're not going to go through every single car. We're trying to get through this as seamless as possible. But where do you want to pick off? Where do you want to, you know, start this whole 63 car little shenanigan of an entry list? It's a crazy entry list. I mean,
it's insane when you think that the best three GT3 drivers in the world are here in such a competitive race. It's absolutely bonkers. For me, the biggest talking point is this is the European debut of the NSX. Or the Blancpain debut, I should say, not European debut.
Yeah, Blank Pan Endurance debut, I think. Yeah. ADACGT
of course it does, yeah.
And the NXX. It's calling it a European debut.
Yeah,
but that's a yikes for me. That's wrong.
Okay, it's... Yeah, but still, it's Blank Pan debut.
Yep. That's right in that regard. Mm. And it also has a nice little Honda Castrol livery, and also Ricardo Patrese.
Along with Bertrand Baguette and Esteban Guerrieri.
Guerrieri.
That's the one.
I mean, okay, first of all, you have a classic livery that works really well with the car. You get a former F1 driver.
Yep.
You get former World Touring driver.
Yep.
Also, wasn't he like a F1 driver?
Who?
Hungary. No, I think he was just a World Touring Car Championship driver.
And you got Bertrand Baguette, who's kicking it up deluxe in Super GT at the moment.
Won the very last Suzuka 1000 kilometers in the GT500 class.
Yep.
So, what are you thinking, Keith? Are people overestimating this car, underestimating it?
It's a new car. It's not a new car. It's a car that most people who don't follow GT racing closely would never have seen before. So they're going to expect it to possibly not do well because of that. That driver lineup is very strong for what it is. And of course, it's not racing overall. It's racing in the Pro-Am class.
So you're saying it has a chance?
Oh yeah, definitely got a chance in that class with that group. In the class of 13, that could very well be up the front, as long as it lasts the 24 hours.
Okay. I'm actually hyped to see that, and of course you get to see the first clip of the car Thursday in Q1, I believe. That's a night qualifying session.
Mm-hmm. Of course, it's in a class with such other cars as an AF Corsa car with Duncan Cameron, Matt Griffin in it. And an AF course car with Nick Homerson, Andrea Bertolini, and Marco Ciocci. And a car with Kenny Hubbell, Thomas Jaeger, and Bert Schneider in it.
Hold on, which one's that?
The 175.
I missed that one.
The Sun Energy One HDP Motorsport. Kenny Hubbell, Martin Conrad, Bert Schneider, Thomas Jaeger.
Okay, so that means we get a Sun Energy One scheme. Okay.
Yep.
I'm down with this vision. How many signs is Kenny Hubbell going to hit? Over under?
7.5.
That's fair.
It's
actually too many signs.
No, it doesn't. He'll find them. He'll have to drive off Stavolo and go get a pie to crash into them, but he'll find some.
That's true. He always seems to find them, whether NASCAR, yeah. IMSA, or Blank Pan.
Yeah.
Kenny Hubbell, I mean, let's give the guy a bit of credit. I mean, they
literally
almost had a chance to win the Bathurst 12-hour.
I know. I still don't know how.
That was going to be the darkest... That was going to be, like, the darkest timeline. Of like, oh my god, why are they leading?
So seeing we're talking about the Pro-Am class, try pick a podium out of that.
I say Ricardo Patrese returns to his former glory and gets his win.
Yeah.
Let's see here. What's this? I'm going to pick this team I've never heard before. Saying Aston Martin V12. I'm going to say reliability gets them to the end. They get like a third place. And Black Falcon gets
Wrong. There's a Black Swan racing car with Tim Pappas, Ron Blickenroll, and Mark Lieb.
Oh my god.
And Mark Miller. There's your winner, right there.
How did my American bias not see that?
I mean, when you got those three... Mark Lieb?
Okay. Yeah, switch... Get Brooklyn Racing out of my picks. Black Swan Racing.
And I think what we're saying here is Pro-Am's actually going to be a really fun class to watch.
Yeah, they won the Pro-Am class in the back of the 12-hour.
The Pro-Am class won the Pro-Am class.
Yeah. And they're in the whole entire, the entire Intercontinental GT Challenge, trying to go for a sweep here.
And Felix Rosenquist in the 49 Ram Racing, which I was going to get to, with Ewan Henke, Darren Burke, and Sally Yolick.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting.
I mean...
Sally Ewick and Ewan Henke are usually racing Aston Martins, but putting them in the Mercedes sounds a bit weird.
Hey, whatever gets you the biscuits, that's going to be a... So I'm going to say it's the 170, it's going to be the 175, the Sun Energy one, as long as Kenny Hubbell doesn't bin it. Black Swan Racing and Ram Racing, the 49. The 51 will be up there as well, the AF Corsa car with Cameron, Mastronardi, Griffin and Scott. And the NSX. So I picked 5 for 3 podium spots. Go me.
That's fair.
Seeing we've started with Pro-Am instead of Pro, let's go to the Am class now.
Alright.
Am class being...
Sorry,
you go.
The Silver Cup. Trying to see if every Silver Cup entry is in the Pro class.
Well, every Silver Cup entry is just silver drivers.
That's right, but so, it's its own class.
Yeah, because the AM, the Pro AM and AM classes have bronze drivers.
So yeah, okay. So Silver Cup is interesting.
Which is annoying because on the street they're all red, so it's like they can't differentiate between the two.
Yeah, Silver Cup is just all white numbers to me.
Yeah, is it? Maybe I'm drunk. I mean, I'm Australian. I'm in Australia. I wouldn't put it past me. You're right. The Silver Cup is in white numbers. Okay, here we go.
I think number 6 is going to take the Silver Cup handily.
The Hubert Howe. Hubert Howe.
Gabriel Piana.
Al-Faisal.
I believe that's the same lineup that won the 24 Hours of Dubai this year. So yeah, I stand with that as them playing Silver Cup.
There's a car here that you may like. Got to find it on the entry list. The Emil Frey G3 Jaguar. It's still the old girl is still going around.
Yes. And that's the Silver Cup too.
Yep. Alex Fontana, Adrian Zarg, and Mikael Green here. What else we got?
For some reason.
Mm-hmm.
I heard that they weren't doing Spa, so that just made my day.
Yep. You've also got the 22 Nissan. Ricardo Sanchez, Jordan Witt, Sean Walkinshaw.
Which, comparing your last performances here, they're not going to have a chance.
No, but you never know. It's 24 hours is a long race. And Ewan Henke, Charlie Eastwood, Ross Gunn, and Ahmed Al-Hathi in an Oman Sport Aston. That's ridiculous.
Okay, so Ewan Henke is doing double duty then.
Yes, he will be. Which is no terrible thing. Oh, no, he's not doing double duty. We've just mentioned, this is the first time I've mentioned his... Wait, I've misread that entirely. Ah, it's not Ewan Henke. I've zoomed out too far. It's actually Ewan Mackay.
Oh.
When I was zoomed in, it looked like Henke, but it's not. So it's Ross Gunn, Charlie Eastwood, Ahmed Al-Hathi, and Ewan Mackay.
Okay, that makes more sense.
That does make a lot more sense, because double entries wouldn't be allowed at Spa.
But they're strong contenders for the Silver Cup as well?
Mm.
Yes. So that's our... I mean, very, very amateur look at the Silver Cup. So let's go down.
It's an amateur class. It's an amateur look. What do you expect?
We'll see Group National.
So should we look at now
Am
Cup?
Let's talk about Yeah, let's take a look at Am Cup, and I'm looking at the 188 Garage 59 car of Top Gear star Chris Harris at the wheel, with Chris Goodwin, Alexander West, and Andrew Watson.
That is a strong lineup for an Am Cup car.
And didn't they win the past two Am Cup races?
Mm-hmm.
At Blank Pan and there.
They did indeed. And Chris Harris, he's a pretty solid race car driver for a TV presenter.
He is. He knows his stuff.
I know his racing came first.
Also, here's a card that if you watch Kerventic long enough, you wouldn't associate them with amateurs. Herbert Motorsport.
Mm-hmm.
With a very colorful livery.
Yeah. As always.
Lots of green on that car.
As always. So you got what? Where are we? Alfred Renauer, Wolfgang Trillier, Edward Lewis Brenua, and Jörg Harding.
Jörg Harding has been with that team for a bit. I don't know who Edward Lewis Browner is, but Wolfgang Trillier has been racing in the second tier class of the Porsche Carrera Cup Deutschland for quite a while. And also Alfred Renauer racing in the Preventic. And, well,
that's where that car always appears.
Yeah, and I believe that team won the most recent win was the 12 Hours of Imola.
Imola, yes. But how many cars were at that event?
I can't remember off the top of my head.
I'm tipping it wasn't many. Kreventic's in a weird spot right now.
There's about 20 or 30 cars, just guessing off the top of my head. That was in late May, so it's been a long time since their last win. Let's take a look at other cars. Barwell Motorsport. I don't know which one it is. I don't know if it's the Pro Clutch, the Silver Cup car, or the Am Cup car. But there is a online competition to design the livery.
Yes, I've seen that. Lamborghini. I have seen that, and the livery looks really good. Actually, we didn't talk about the Am car or the Silver Cup car, because the Silver Cup car for Barwell has also got Rick Brokens in there. And we know how good he can be.
He is very good.
Yeah, but the Am car as well. Leo Machitsky, Adrian Amstutz, Richard Abra, Patrick Kujala. They're all names that sort of you hear about, and hear about as doing well.
Yeah, like you hear about them.
Mm-hmm.
So, strong contender for the amateur class. Also, let's take a look at the...
Ooh, I like it when you say ooh.
Vulcanhorst Motorsport bringing a BMW M6.
Ooh.
Looks like it's going to be kind of middle of the field a bit. Santiloc Racing with the Audi Am Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Santiloc always provides an excellent livery. Glad they're in the field. And also you got Target Racing.
I very much doubt it's the Chip Ganassi Racing team from the U.S.
if I don't see an actual Target in that car, I'm going to be disappointed.
There is going to be a Target on that car when a Ferrari hits it.
Too true, Kiwi. Okay, so that's kind of like a little thing of the Am Cup. Let's take a look at Group National a bit.
Yeah.
Basically Porsche Cup cars and Super Trofeo. That's it.
Yeah. They're cars that, you know, they're there. They drive. You hope they don't
Lower
crash.
GT3.
You hope they don't crash into your favorite driver. And they may catch fire.
Moving chicane.
Yeah, basically.
So that brings us to the pro class.
It's the best rep of a class I've ever had. So the pro class, that's what we're really here for, right?
And Audi is bringing it all.
as they always do for Spa.
For any kind of GT3 endurance race. I mean, there's a livery out there with, like, bright green on the car this year.
Ooh.
Can't remember which one it was, but I did saw that, like, on my Instagram just floating around. So Audi painting around some new interesting liveries. And, of course, this is the pro class. You know the names by now. I mean, you get Black Falcon with their Mercedes factory drivers, Bentley with their drivers. I mean, it's Bentley, Jordan Pepper, Jules Gooden, Vincent Abril, Maxime Soule, Andy Suchak.
You're getting confused with Bentley, yeah. I've just seen that Audi livery, and oh boy, that is sweet.
Oh yeah, it is.
That liquor green.
Okay, Ed.
I may have just made that with my mic. Yeah, but you mentioned the Bentley, six very strong drivers as always. The champions, or the winners from the last time out, of course, the Lexus Racing. They've got their two cars here.
Oh, yes, I do see it now.
Mm-hmm.
Christian Klein, Albert Costa, Marco Seifried.
Yep. And the other car, obviously, Stefano Trulli, Norbert Seidler, Marcus Pallottaglia. I've butchered the Finnish name.
Give you two Nissans, mm-hmm. one in Silver Cup, one in overall pro, GRT Grasser Racing Team. Already won a 24-hour race this year, Rolex 24 in the GT Daytona class.
Yeah, not the 19, though. That's the rubbish one.
And also Monte Plas by Land Motorsport.
Another sick looking Audi.
Got defending champions Audi Sport Team Santi Lac.
We
can't break the Winkle Rock.
I want to go back a bit to Monte Plas by Land Motorsport though. The drivers in that: Jeffrey Schmidt, Sheldon Danderlin, Calvin Vanderlid. They're not highly rated drivers, but that's a car that could do very well.
I'd say a chance to win, because Land Motorsport, they always find a way, unless you're there in IMSA, but they always find a way.
where are we up to? The Walking Horse Machine, the Beamer, Philip Eng, Thomas Blomqvist, and Christian Krogens. Yeah, it's alright.
Yeah, I like the Philip Eng, Tom Blomqvist, and Christian Krohn's one better.
I think there's better Beamers in the field as well. As he says, looking for the road racing ones, of course. But we'll get to, the road racing Beamers are obviously the two Beamers that everyone's got to work out for. The first one of those, the 98 with Whitman, Jesse Krohn, and Ricky Collard. And the 99 with Klingsman, Katzberg, and Sims. Oh, baby.
Yeah, those are the best BMW team.
Yeah, easily the best BMW team.
Garage 59.
Yes.
Gonna win last time out at Paul Ricard, but to sort of threw the way. But Kobe Lettegaard, Ben Barnicot, Olivier Pla.
Not a bad addition to your Garage 59 machine.
And I mean, so that's a team going to be looking out for. But Atempto Racing, what a huge turnaround for that team. They won a Blanc Pan Sprint Series event this year. Mm-hmm. Pierre Kacker, Kim Louis Schramm, which that is a ADAC F4.
Yep.
And Clemens Schmidt, which is a Porsche GT3 Cup Challenge Middle East guy.
Yeah. It's fair to say that Attempto Racing have stopped attempting to race and actually figuring out how to race. That is a terrible joke, I apologise. And of course you got the 66 as well, which is very much their less fancied Audi, I'm going to say.
I mean, you get Jamie Green in the car, back Audi DTM driver.
Yeah, but the other two, Steen Shorthorst and Peter Shorthorst.
and one of those guys were racing in the Renault Sport Trophy reserved to the RS01s before that series went defunct.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how much I expect from Attempto, but as long as they don't have the usual... Every time I pay attention to Attempto racing, they seem to do something horribly wrong. I don't know what
focus.
It is.
Don't focus on them this year.
I won't. I've got other cars which we'll get to that I'm focusing on. Don't worry. Now, the next team we're going to mention is the team I think is a real shot at winning this, and they've been the form team of the season. Who?
SMP?
Oh. I was going to talk about R Motorsport.
Oh, right. SMP has been up there, but they never could have capitalized. And plus, they have Mikhail Ocean in there, so that's good in my book.
Yeah, I was going to talk about SMP separately, but R Motorsport, their two cars for this event, Dominic Baumann, Martin Kukoc, and Maxime Martin in the 62, and the 76 with Matthew Vaxivier, Jack Dennis, and Nicky Tiem.
Which, of course, is the Nicky Tiem Jake Dennis car that took the car to victory in the 3 hours of Silverstone.
Mm-hmm. And the car that qualified on pole at Silverstone and Paul Ricard.
It's a quick one, will it win Spa?
Yes.
Nah, Group National car is going to take him out.
Fine, we'll get on to SMP cars if you're thinking R Motorsport aren't going to win, because you're very much nearly wrong.
Mikhail Lotion, Miguel Molina, David Rigon. First of all, Mikhail Lotion deserved to win IndyCar. He was given a bad shake. Mikhail Lotion, with the teamwork of Miguel Molina and David Rigon, will help bring this car to victory.
You're wrong.
Colin, this is the winner.
You're wrong.
Am I, though?
Yes. I'll tell you why when we get to the car. SMP have never had the luck at this place. They've never had this. They've always seemed to find the gravel truck or find another car or find the fire or find something wrong.
I'll bring them luck.
You. No comment. If it's anything like you're tipping in the Le Mans podcast, you won't bring anyone any luck apart from a great deal of shame.
That's right. Every single one of our podcasts, I'm like, oh, but I think Bicolas is going to have a good deal. And
hey, I'm still salty about the fact they cost me a jar of olives.
That's right.
Damn you and your success.
Of course, you get... Oh, there's three GRT Grasser racing cars. There's, of course, the good one, the number 63.
Mm-hmm.
Bertolotti, Engelhardt, and Caldarelli.
Yes.
And there's the 82, which is like kind of like the amateurish.
Amateurish with Ralph and Nike and Phil Keane and Frank Piera. Yeah.
I mean, it's not the better car.
It's not the better car. Yeah, it's not the worst car in the world, though. Where's S&P's second one? Oh, yeah, they got S&P Racing by Aka ASP. We've completely missed that. Vitaly Petrov and Michael Meadows.
Yeah, I'm not too hyped on Vitaly Petrov as much as I am Mikhail Losh.
Yeah, but that's American bias.
Yeah, Mikhail Losh actually came here racing the car.
Exactly. Vitaly Petrov is actually not a handy little steerer. Just no one gives him a lot of credit.
Let's take a look at the...
Well, we're talking Mercedes.
Man filter. The livery on this car is going to be fantastic. You get Gary Paffett, Eduardo Mortara, and Renger van der Zand. Livery fantastic. Driver's fantastic.
Yeah. Gary Paffett. This would be one of his... Well, it's definitely his first Spa, isn't it?
He raced Spa last year, I believe. Race.
Okay. But he's a very handy DTM driver.
He's also, I believe, leading the championship points in DTM at the moment.
He is indeed leading the 2018 Deutsche Tourenwagen Masters.
Yeah, so Gary Paffitt, very handy steerer. Of course, a former DTM champion looking for his second. But he'll pilot. I mean, this is a great lineup for this Mercedes GT3. I believe that this might be a car that people might not think will not win because they may have never heard of the team name before. But Manfilter, they definitely have a shot this year. And that livery looks fantastic with like the snake scales on the car that they painted.
But the fact is, though, there's so many Mercedes teams here that could potentially outperform them.
Audi stack their cards.
Oh, yeah. We haven't even talked about the Black Falcon Mercedes.
I mean,
Mauro Engel, Yama Berman, Lucas Stoltz. Come on.
This is a strong lineup.
Lucas Stoltz is a silver, is still a bloody good silver to have in a pro car.
I think the Manfilter lineup is the better one, though.
What about the Marciello, Tristan Voitier, Daniel Giuncadello one? The 88?
That's decent.
Yeah. It's better than decent. That's possibly the best of the Mercedes in my mind.
I mean, Tristan Voitier is a very good driver. I mean, I've seen him race in an IndyCar, and especially he can do really well on an oval. Just imagine you can do in a road course.
This is true. Nah.
But we've been kind of ignoring one manufacturer, Kiwi, and that's been Porsche.
Well, what about Lexus?
We did talk about Lexus.
Oh, yeah. I know what we said 10 minutes ago.
Stefan Natale, Norbert Seeler, and Marcus Peltola makes the one number 114.
We did talk about Lexus.
But Porsche, they have Team Bernhard and Manti Racing.
Yeah. See, Porsche don't bring many cars, but the cars they bring, they just decide to go OP and then some more.
It's so OP that all Porsche drivers in the pro class are platinum.
Shall we go through them?
Let's go with Team Bernhard first. Mm-hmm. Timo Bernhard.
Team owner.
Earl Bamber.
Legend.
Lawrence Banthor.
Maniac.
To Grello we go. Roman Dumas.
Legend.
Frederick Makovicki.
Meh.
And Dirk Werner.
Oh boy.
Now, Team Bernhard did have a chance to win last year.
Yes.
They have the data.
They have the drivers.
And they know more.
They have the only Kiwi in the field.
So that means they're going to bid it in the last turn.
Don't you dare say that, you heathen. So, see,
this bad luck just because Kiwi is cheering them.
Yeah, so when you're saying car for the win, that's my pick, the 117.
Oh, you're saying Team 75.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, I'm not going to go with Lamborghini because one of our viewers pointed out that the Lambos do kind of have the BOP against them. I'm going to overall win. I'm going to say... you know what, Manti? I'm going to go with the other Porsche.
Problem is, though, trying to pick a pro-class GTE car in this race is kind of like trying to pick which club you want to go to at 4 in the morning. Either way, you're going to make a bad decision.
Yeah, I probably should have won Audi, but seeing Porsche winning at Spa wouldn't be a bad sight to see. But Audi and Mercedes do have the numbers, so if you're playing Fantasy WEC, I mean, it's
good luck. Good luck.
To not bet against them odds.
See, for me, okay, here's an exercise for you. Which of the Audis is going to be the best one?
Trying to base things off of my own opinion here.
Which is the point of a podcast? Just quietly.
I think my heart says Land Motorsport because I love that team so much, but my brain says number two.
See, my brain says it's Santa Lock Audi.
Oh, Santa Lock.
Yeah.
So I Winkle think Hawk, Haas,
and Vavish.
Yeah, I have Fryens, Nico Müller, and René Rast.
Yeah, I mean, any of these Audi lineups you can look at and go, that's okay.
So with the entry list in hindsight, let's talk about some new pit stop changes that we have in the Spa 24.
We should indeed. So those of you who watched last year and the year before will be very annoyed at the lack of strategy that the pit box could play in this race. It's very much pit every 65 minutes. You couldn't leave before a certain time. You couldn't leave after a certain time. It was, as Flood said it when he did the review podcast a couple of years ago, it's very much like the teams had nothing. They were just literally there to do a job. They had no influence on the race result. That has changed a bit for this year. Thank Christ for that.
What are those changes?
Change number one. There's still a minimum pit stop time for some stops. Every 6 hours, you can do a stop that can take as short as you want.
Oh.
Yeah. So if you decide you don't want to change tires, you don't have to. If you decide to short fill, you can. Gives you a better chance to play with strategy. Yes, you're still got to come to the pits every 65 minutes or 70 if the end of your stint's on a safety car or four course yellow. But there is now a room to move with what you actually do in the pit stops.
Okay, so that's going to make the race a bit more enjoyable this year, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, strategy is never a bad thing to add to a race.
This is not the first time we've seen these Joker stops. They've been implemented at the Circuit Paul Ricard race that had really fantastic race result, race finish, that is. So, could the same thing happen to Spa? We're going to wait to find out.
Yeah. The other things that at Spa that will be interesting to keep an eye on with the pit lane, each team will have to do a technical stop halfway through the race for a minimum of 5 minutes.
What stop?
A technical stop. So in other words, they have to come in for 5 minutes, can do brake changes, can do whatever they want for that 5 minutes. And it's got to be done between the 11th hour, sorry, between the start of the 12th hour and the end of the 15th hour. And this year, you can't do it under full course yellow with safety car.
Ooh.
You have to do it during green flag running. Oh, so, at least come in under green flag.
Yeah. If you come in under green flag and the safety car comes out, then you get lucky.
So there's another element of strategy, I guess.
And that's it for pit stop changes. Now we're nearing into the last legs here in part two of this GT Quarterly episode of Endurance Chat. Let's talk about something that's happening on Friday that usually pertains to big announcements, and that's the SRO press conference that happens every year. It's fun to speculate on this because last year things were announced like the Asia Pacific 36 and the Hampton Downs 12 hour, which, if you know, those things never came into fruition.
What a shame.
Yeah. Of course, some announcements do stay true, like the splitting up of the GT4 platform around Europe. Hot rumors that, of course, they also introduced the calendars for all the SRO championships, including Pro Evo World Challenge now. And some calendar rumors, is that Silverstone might not be around next year.
This is news also, to me, and I'm just going, what the absolute.
The Pirelli Look Challenge is going to have a new exciting season finale.
Do we know what that season's finale is?
We don't know, but the season finale is going to be held in October, probably.
Is it potentially then going to coincide nicely with the Laguna Seca 8 hours?
Well, the Parallel Challenge touring car class has already finished their seasons there. So I don't know if their team... They could probably... I don't know. I wouldn't do it because it might take away some GT entries for the 8 hour itself.
You know what? You know what I would love to hear? I don't know if I will hear it, but I'd love to hear it. A Blancpain Sprint Series round in March at the Bend Motorsport Park.
Blancpain GT Asia. You might have to compromise for that.
I'll take it. Either way, whenever gets more cars at Bathurst. All right.
And another thing we can see is maybe a new addition to the Intercontinental GT Challenge. I mean, No rumors have been said about it, but Stefan Attell has always said he wants to bring back the Kyalami 9 hour back.
And doesn't he now get involved in the ownership of Kyalami or something like that, if I remember rightly? Who owns Kyalami now?
No, Porsche does. Porsche South Africa kind of owns the track.
Okay.
Which... I don't think Attell has anything in South Africa at the moment.
Okay.
But, I don't know, maybe they could try to do Australia, Hampton Downs again.
Just something, because Hampton Downs was a brilliant idea that fell down not because of Hampton Downs itself, because of other factors.
Yeah, low car counts and what they saw the previous year, though. But, SRO press conference, it might actually interfere with a support race, which... If in case you're wondering, the support races are Lamborghini Super Trofeo, Europe.
Super Crash. So Porsche Super Crash Feo.
Yep. Then you have Formula Renault Euro Cup and European Formula 3 Championship. So you get two GT support series and two Formula support series. It's something for the Formula 1 fan and something for the sports car fan.
It really is a brilliant weekend of motorsport when you think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you look at events like Le Mans 24 Hour, they have some races during the week, but there's so much downtime between them. At Spa, it's actually bang, 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 bang.
Oh, yeah. And the awesome part about it is that there's not a lot of time to wait before the final support race and the broadcast starting of the Spa 24. So Spa 24 this weekend, man, it's gonna be a great weekend. I mean, of course you can catch all the action. Race Thread is gonna be up on our Blancpain, of course.
How does one watch Spa?
If you're not geo-blocked, you can easily watch it through the GT World YouTube channel and Nismo TV. But if you live in America like me, Motor Trend On Demand will be broadcasting the race. But I'm going to be using a VPN to watch through YouTube so I can actually use the rewind feature. But officially, at least North America, Motor Trend On Demand. But of course, we don't mind if you use a VPN.
So the broadcast starts at 90 minutes before the actual green flag falls, which is at what time?
I actually do not know.
4:30 local.
It's 4:30 local.
Mm-hmm.
So that means...
Which is 8:30 down in Australia land.
It's probably going to be like 9:30 o'clock local time here. And GT World streams, of course, Spa 24 Hour itself, and the Porsche GT3 Cup Benelux race. European Formula 3 Championship YouTube channel streams, of course, European Formula 3 Championship. And I believe the Renault Sport YouTube channel live streams Formula Renault. So that's it for the second edition of GT Quarterly. Man, this has been a very, very long episode. I'm kind of whooped. Gonna take a little nap before work after this episode.
Lucky you, I get to start idling this bullcrap.
Yep. So any afterthoughts, Kibi? Anything you want to add before we cap this off?
There's something I want to add about a project we're working on shortly. Keep an eye out on the Reddit r/WEC for a special project we're doing for Wood for Endurance Chat. All I will say...
r/WEC/blank-pan-entry 2019. That's going to be an answer to the SRO press conference.
All I will say about the special project is get your thoughts about what you think about sports cars down on paper.
And we'll leave it at that. That has been it's been a great episode here at GT Quarterly. We'll have another episode of GT Quarterly within the next couple of months, probably within the autumn months, at the same time as that little project rolls around. In the meantime, you can check out other Endurance Chat episodes about IMSA, WEC, LMS as a whole, and also Super Chat.
Supercar Chat.
Kiwi Chris and Flood. Supercar Chat. Kiwi Chris and Floodman 11. World of V8 Supercars are... Not actually V8 Supercars anymore, isn't it? It's version Australia.
Don't worry, I called it V8 Supercars all the time. The podcast. Hell, even last time we did the podcast, I even sound off as Endurance Chat.
Check out those two little podcasts as well while you wait for another edition of GT Quarterly to get your fix on the world of GT3 Motorsport. I'm Chris Washington 7, this is QB Chris, signing off here on the Spot 24 Preview.